Ken Crowther's back on the radio. Listen back to highlights of the Gardening with Ken Crowther program here on this podcast for worldradiogardening.com.
Know your onions.
Want to know about dahlias or flowers? Then get in touch with Ken via the WhatsApp messaging group.
Grow Right Horticultural Supplies is proud to sponsor World Radio Gardening.
Today I've got with me as well Chris Cheswright, who is Secretary of the Essex Hardy Plant Society. Warm welcome to you, Chris. Now, just hardy plants, surely that covers everything, doesn't it?
It does in a way. Anything that can really survive outside all year. So it can be bulbs, perennials, shrubs, roses, all sorts of stuff.
So it's quite wide, but do you find that the, you know, because I've heard that some of the branches of the Hardy Plant Society are fussier on who belongs. In other words, if you grew roses, they're not interested as an example.
I believe,
is that true?
I believe so. We'll accept anybody growing any plant of any form. So we even accept annuals and things. So anything that's five. So, you know, I keep a lot of plants that I have to put in a cold greenhouse over winter. So,
but they're hardy.
They're hardy. They don't die except 2 years ago when we had that really bad winter. But yeah, so we're interested in any plants really that people are interested in and grow in Essex.
Now, do you find though that people who join your group are growing specific groups of plants? So they might be, I was saying about shrubs and roses, but a lot of people grow specific herbaceous plants which they're a little addictive of, let's say. Do you find that?
Yeah, we do have, you know, we've got a very varied membership, so we've got people who grow all sorts of things really. So we got a few who've just gone through the snowdrop phase, you know.
Oh, that's big snowdrops.
It's huge, huge, and very expensive as well, it seems. So yeah, but we've got people, most people are interested in sort of perennial type plants of various types. So yeah, but we've got sort of over 100 members, so there's a huge variety of groups.
Now, we'll be talking more to you after the news, but just let me know, what's your addiction then? Or is yours varied?
My addiction is quite varied. I grow a lot of hostas. I keep them in pots because of the slugs, which you're supposed to like now. So I'm saying, say less
we won't
about
even,
that.
I'm not going to even go there on
so,
that one.
So a lot of hostas, and I also grow a lot of carnivorous plants, which actually are sort of very hardy as well. So
they're hardier than people realise.
They are. I've grown some outside, and I know people have had them outside 4 or 5 years or more, and they're fine. So a few of my addictions, there are many more.
We've gone down to addiction. I must just gum back on the slugs, actually. I couldn't believe that the RHS could tell us that we've got to leave all our slugs. And the interesting one on that, I don't know what you thought about it as a hosta grower, but is you could obviously now buy a book with all the pictures of the slugs so that you can identify them. I might sound a little sarcastic. Do you sort of half agree?
Well, the species of slugs are fine, but actually it is knowing which ones aren't fine. But by the time you've found out, they've usually eaten.
They've eaten your hosta.
The hosta, I keep all my hostas in pots.
How do you prevent slugs rising up the pots?
Yeah, they come in through the bottom.
If people don't know that.
No.
Because they put copper strips
around,
don't they?
And it's not the big slugs that are eating them. It's the little ones and the snails, which are the main ones.
So that's an interesting one. Do copper strips help on pots?
I don't think any of these things really work. Cockle shells and all sorts of stuff, sheep's wool, anything. A barrier might help, but you've got to make sure that barrier's there all the time. And it's all right if you've got one plant, isn't it? But if you've got several or hundreds, you just can't do it, really.
So take us back to your group, because your group then covers... If you imagine, you know a lot of the members, I'm sure, as secretary, what sort of plants are they coming to the society with that they enjoy growing?
I think the majority of people are growing things such as, you know, a lot of the perennial plants. And particularly, I think people are getting more interested in things that might extend seasons, like chrysanthemums. Not the cultivated, the sort of smaller flowered ones, so which will flower into things like November. So we usually have a sales table at the every meeting where people bring along sort of spare plants.
And do you swap, sell, or...?
People donate them to the group, but people do swap stuff. But we get a big variety of things. But the majority of it is sort of hardy perennials that have lived in Essex gardens, so should live in other people's Essex gardens.
And that's quite important, because so often you can, you know, you see in, I'm not trying to put down garden centres as a lot of people do, because garden centres have provided a huge service. But a lot of sometimes plants are put in front of you when you walk in, but they're not necessarily as hardy or perhaps used to the climate that they're going to be planted in, because a lot of garden centre chains are selling across the whole country, and Essex has its very dry most of the time, except this winter. But it generally is one of the driest counties in the country, isn't it?
Yes.
And you've got to allow for that if you're growing particularly herbaceous perennials, haven't you?
Yeah, and going back to the garden centre, they give you a good range of plants. A lot of them are grown in Essex because there's big nurseries, perennial nurseries quite close to here. But you're also generally only getting plants that are in flower. And when you come to our group, you're going to get plants that aren't, but you've got the people there who know what they look like and can explain about them.
And that's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, because you can find out a bit about, you know, this one's okay by a sunny fence, this one lives under a hedge, you know, so you do get that variety. And generally, if you talk to people, someone will go, oh, if you go and see Eric over there,
he grows those,
he can let you know about that. So as well as having a speaker at a meeting, we also have people, you know, the general chat, and people can find out about things. And I think you do find a bigger range of plants, because lots of people in Essex are growing on clay or sand generally.
Yeah, it's not. I was talking about that right at the beginning of the programme, saying what are we living through at the moment, because we've got wet conditions.
Yeah.
And a good half of this county is clay.
Yes. You know, I live in Wickford, and it's the estate near us was on the brickfields when I was young. It was still the pits where they dug the clay out. So lots of people are living on that.
And trying to grow.
You know, and obviously a lot of people like myself have, over the decades, have improved the soil by putting manure on and mushroom compost and all those sorts of things. But then we've got other members who are living like around Colchester and that. They're basically on sand. So,
because again, it's
extremely different conditions.
Because they're extracting sand and gravel from those areas anyway.
You know, there's all the old pits around that area, isn't there? We got a new, you know, and then you've got a few people who are living in, like, around, say, Danbury, where you've got acid soil as well.
Those black acid soil.
Yeah, so you've got a huge range. But what you get to the group is people who are growing on the soils that you're growing on, not looking at the television or reading a magazine where they're talking about someone in the north of Scotland growing Mechanopsis blue poppies, which you don't even want to consider down here.
But people still buy
them.
But they're not successful.
No, they buy them. Oh, I've got this. Yeah, see how you do with that. you know, I tried growing Asiatic primulas for a time, really, you know, candelabra, and they just don't...
They don't like it.
Don't like it. Even if you stand them in water, they don't like it, because the brilliant hot sunshine just doesn't mean so you learn. You still buy stuff you shouldn't buy, but
we all do that though, don't we? You know, we like something, we try growing it, and sometimes you're just not successful, and you've got to admit you're not successful.
But I think what you get in the group is a group of like-minded people with varying degrees of expertise, or, you know, you've got some real experts on plants who could talk you through the structure of flowers, through to people who've got a small garden who just like growing plants. So, but you will pick up knowledge from the speakers, but also from the various members that are there, and the garden visits that we do during the summer in particular.
So tell us a bit about your garden visits. Do you visit members' gardens? Is that the idea?
We don't meet during the summer months. I think that we might add a few meetings in the future, but the main thing was people are gardening during those months. But what we've got this year, and before it's been one or two gardens, but virtually every month now, from about May to September, we've got a visit. Some of them are to National Garden Scheme gardens that are open by appointment. So we're trying to get a good range of those spread across the county, because you can, if you don't think about it, you can end up with them all being in Colchester area, and the people in Benfleet, it's a very long way. So we've got a range of those, but we also open, and we just call it Meet the Gardener, because, for example, I opened my garden for the National Garden Scheme, but we're opening in July. We're having a day where there's ours and somebody else in Wickford who are both open, so people can go between the two gardens.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And find out about, you know, to see different gardens in the same area as well.
And they can come and see your hostas in your pots.
They can, and the various other plants. And
what's your other? You said your hostas, but if you're opening your garden, what other things are specific to your garden? Do you think?
We do grow quite a lot of what look tropical plants, but most of them sit in like cannas and things.
Yeah.
But most of those sit in, you know, they're still in the greenhouses. They're just coming up now, but they sit in an unheated greenhouses during the summer. A few things we have to bring indoors, like colocasias and elephant's ears.
So you've got to look after those.
But I also grow a lot of bulbs. So at the moment, everything's coming up early. So there's narcissi, tulips coming up. Camellias is another thing.
They're lovely, aren't they?
Yes. So various varieties. Again, it's one of those things that you see the blue.
It's addictive, isn't it?
It is. and, you know, yesterday, well, Hightall, I've got an event up there this weekend. And
that's right, yeah.
One of the nurseries there specialises in camellias. So thankfully I'd already brought them last year, the ones I wanted.
The ones you wanted,
I didn't need any more this time. But yeah, things like that. And I grow a few succulents in the greenhouse. Some of them sit outside. A few alpines grow a lot from seed as well. I try to, because you get seed. You know, and the Hardy Plant Society has... That's an annual seed list, which you can just tick.
You can tick and tick and collect.
I get stuff you've never heard of sometimes.
But that's good, isn't it?
Or you can just go, I'm going to try all those plants in that genera and just see some of them come up, some of them don't. So,
now, I'm not being rude about your age at all, but what you find is, I mean, you know, yeah. I went to the Alpine Society show down at the race course.
Yep.
And I go to different clubs and talk to clubs. And what we're finding is more and more in gardening is encouraging younger...
Yep.
I don't mean, you know, a 20-year-old. I mean a younger person into your societies and clubs. Are you finding a similar sort of problem, or are you finding that because of your varied... And it is. You've got a varied programme. You've got a varied interest. It's not specific, is it, to one type of plant. You're getting younger people...
We're getting a few younger people, but I think, as you say, when you go to places like Hyde Hall plant fairs and things, you do tend to have an older age group. And whether that's because you've got more time. The other thing is, a lot of, you know, we meet on a Sunday afternoon, which is interesting because most people meet during the week. But also, I think there's been a tendency to do most of the other visits and things during weekdays, which I know some people have flexible weeks, but a lot of younger people are working.
Both of them.
So you need to do some things at weekends to encourage. But it's actually how you encourage. You know, we've got places on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and we got one or two sort of younger members who run some of those things. But you can end up with membership on there, but not membership of the group, because they're on there, but they don't. They want people.
But that's a useful entry point.
But if I just feel a lot of younger people who just use social media are missing out on the personal experience. You can get someone sort of tapping away and giving you advice, but you don't know whether that's good advice or not, because we all go on Facebook and see things which are.
Horrific.
And you just want to say, don't do that. And someone's doing it from Australia, and you're in Essex, so is that, you know, might be helpful, but it might not. But I just think it's how you get these people to come out of their living rooms or their homes
behind their computers and actually come see the plants.
Come out and actually think, oh, you know, when we get people there, you know, they realize it's good. But when you go around gardens, you do see some younger people, but not lots, because you know they're all out there buying plants because there's so many garden centres and things around.
How can people get in touch with you? Have you got a website? Let's hear a bit how people can actually find you, because that's really important, and then we'll just run through some of the events.
Yeah, we've got the... You can find out about the Hardy Plant Society nationally through hardy-plant.org.uk. If you just put in Hardy Plant Society on a Google search, you'll find it straight away. If you want to find Essex, we've got our own website, which is essex-hps.org. But again, if you put in Essex Hardy Plant Society,
it comes up anyway.
So you'll find that information. That gives links to things like our Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. So you can find that info, and it also gives information on meetings. There is a meeting this afternoon.
And
so
what's your meeting this afternoon on?
The meeting this afternoon is about bulbs for all seasons. So
and
we
who's
got,
that by?
It's by Tony Goode, who I believe lives in Wales and is coming to talk to us about bulbs across the whole year. Because a lot of people think bulbs are just in the spring.
No, they're not.
But there's bulbs come up in the autumn, summer, and all over the place. So it'll be interesting. I think he's been one of the people who've been out collecting bulbs in other countries, so it's probably going to, you know, I'm anticipating a bit of a travelogue and a bit of information on growing and conditions.
And
for
whereabouts
those.
Do you hold these meetings in?
We meet at Wickham Bishops Village Hall, which is in Church Road. You can't miss it if you go into Wickham Bishops because it's a great big hall. And the postcode is CM83JZ. Visitors are welcome to come for a couple of meetings, and we just ask for a couple of pounds donation. There is cake and tea, so it's not bad. So it's cheaper than going to a coffee shop.
It is, isn't it?
And you get a good bit of entertainment, and you might even be able to buy a few plants as well, which is probably inevitable. So people are welcome to come for a couple of meetings. We then ask, obviously, that you join the Hardy Plant Society and our
your local branch
as well. Yes.
Chris, it's been fascinating talking to you. It sounds a great meeting there. And you've got other meetings coming up as well, haven't you?
Can I just, I'm just looking through our newsletter, because we've got an event on the 11th of May.
Right.
Which is a lecture day from 10 o'clock at the same venue. If you go onto our website, you can find out about that. But we've got Toby Buckland, who does a presentation on the telly, and two other speakers.
A man who they let go from Gardener's World,
and
he should have been left.
And
there.
He's been appearing back again, hasn't he?
Yes.
So, but that's on Saturday 11th. You can find information on our website. And if you look on there, and tickets are available, and it tells you how to.
And we'll give
get
that another
tickets.
Plug on World Radio Gardening as well. In just a moment, we'll be talking to Andrew Tokley. He's our man on veg. He knows everything about veg. And are we struggling a bit this year with the weather conditions? Well, I know I am, because, you know, getting even a seed bed together at the moment would be pretty difficult, because it's lumpy, it's wet, it's absolutely horrible. And just a reminder that I'll be back doing Gardening with Ken here on City Sound on the 14th of April. And so put that date in your diary, 14th of April, and I should be here doing gardening for 2 hours on a Sunday morning between 9 and 11. Tell your friends that I'm here, Ken Crowther on City Sound. So look out for that. That's really important. We had a question I mentioned earlier on, glibly, that don't go out and scarify. And this guy has, John from Billericay, has said that he has scarified his lawn and it does look a little bit muddy. Should he put a top dressing on? Well, if he's got a clay-based ground, you want to be very careful of the top dressing that you buy. And the reason you buy a thing called lawn dressing, which is what you would spread on your lawn, and then you rake it. In theory, I'll tell you how you're supposed to do it, but most people don't, because I try and make gardening easy. People will use what they call a true lute, which is a frame. If you're a professional, you use a true lute. It's a frame of metal made up with what looks like thin angle iron. And that will, because it's wide and broad, it will fill in all those little divots and dips on your lawn and actually make it really look good. However, I use the back of a rake. Back of a rake works really well. Now, back to what you buy. What you need to do is always only buy one bag of your top dressing from a garden centre and have a look at it. See what it's like. Because what you need, if you've got a clay-based lawn area, is you need one that is sandy. Now, CH Binder over at Morton, they do a really good one. They actually supply a dressing.
Call Ken Crowther now on 01245 492 696.
They do dressings for all sorts of pitches. They do some of the major cricket pitches across the country. So if you specifically ask for one that's got a good content of sand, they will see that you buy a good content of sand. You can pick it up from Biders at Moreton, and they also deliver as well. So watch out for them. They are great. If you're buying from a garden centre, buy one bag, have a look at it and see whether it's very peat, I say peaty, peat looking, because nothing's got peat in it today, but a composty, black. If it's black, you don't want it on a clay soil, you want sand base. So I hope that's helped you, John. I wouldn't even do anything at the moment. I'd let it dry for a bit and maybe go over it and try and spike it a bit. If you've got the ability of a slitter or a spiker, perhaps hiring a machine, that's worth doing as well. I don't know how large your lawn is because you didn't actually tell us, but that is helpful. Greetings, Andrew.
Good morning.
Now, Andrew Toakley, I must mention, horticultural manager from King Seeds in Kelvedon. I got it right. I didn't say Coggleshaw this time, did I?
That's right, yes, we're in Kelvedon, yeah.
And I was saying earlier on that what a disaster this spring is for a lot of people trying to work their veg plots. Would you agree?
Can't do a lot at the moment, no. I mean, the one thing I would say is that you can do some preparation in the greenhouse, sowing things and that sort of thing. Last weekend we had a dry spell and I did manage to dig a last little piece of ground that I needed to dig. Luckily I dug most of mine in the autumn. And if we get a dry spell, it will pull down lovely and you'll soon be able to get on.
I love your expression. That's a very, I always think of that as an Andrew expression, pull down. Now, people listening won't have a clue what we're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. And in fact, tell us the tool that you use as well, Andrew.
I use a chrome.
And people don't know what a chrome is, do they?
No, and a chrome is basically a fork that has been bent at a right angle by a blacksmith on a very long handle. And it's a Suffolk tool, really. And you pull it through the ground and it will break down all those clods and lumps in the soil so that it's a nice workable structure.
And you can buy what is the closest thing to that. I know Wolf Multi-Tools do a very large, like, triple hook, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, a bit like a cultivator.
Cultivator type thing.
Yeah.
Which works very well, doesn't it?
Yeah, or if you're going by some boot sale on a day that's very when it's a bit dry out, you often see somebody selling a chrome,
right?
Because they don't know what it is either. but you can often pick them up from there. I mean, I've got one that I say that's actually made out of a muck fork, so it's actually got a point of tine at the bottom.
Yeah,
and I've got another one that's actually made out of a lady's fork, that so it's bent out of a smaller lady's fork. So that on a long handle, so you can use that to pull in between rows later on.
So you can't, I mean, basically, if you had a plot at the moment, there's nothing you can actually sow at all, is there, at this moment in time, do you think?
In the actual plot, no.
Yeah, nothing, is there?
Not really. I mean, I wouldn't, even if we get a dry spell, what you have to remember is that the soil, although it's been wet, and it might, they're talking about it turning a bit milder this week, you need to make sure that the soil temperature is a minimum of around 45 degrees Fahrenheit.
And
so
you're not
that, 7 degrees C.
And you're not a person that bears your bum and puts it on the ground, because that's what they used to do, didn't they?
That's what they used to do, but my plot's right near the road, so it'd be a bit difficult to do that. What I tend to do is the first thing I will probably sow on the plot will be a row of radishes.
Is that because they're fast to germinate?
Yeah, and you can then see, I mean, radishes, when the soil is really warm, will be up within 7 to 10 days.
Right.
Quicker than that in the summer. But if they're taking longer than that, the soil's not warm. And there's no benefit of sowing seeds, particularly things like carrots and beet and all that, into cold soil, because that's when you'll get problems with patchy germination, right, and all that sort of thing. You're far better to wait. If you want to start early, you could have some module trays in a greenhouse, and you could sow some beetroot, two or three seeds in each module. You could sow spring onions the same, so that you've got plants that are ready. As soon as the conditions are right, you can then plant them out, and you're catching up a bit of that time.
Now, if you haven't got that facility, I know a bit of it, you could do a little bit on your windowsill, but it doesn't give you a lot of room. Say you haven't got that facility, what you're saying is that you could go and buy those plants. You can do the mail order. I know you guys do mail order, don't you, plug plants? But
we
that's
do.
What you'd have to do, wouldn't you, buy plug plants or plants?
Not necessarily. You can do if you don't want to lose those early months.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing to remember is we're only in March. We're only in March.
People are impatient, though, aren't they?
They are. I mean, very rare is it that I sow any carrots before, I would say, before the 6th, 7th of April.
Uh-huh.
Because if you sow them too early, you're going to get patchy germination. So you're far better to wait, let the conditions be correct, and then start sowing. There's still plenty of time. Yes, you might be a few weeks later harvesting, but I'd rather do that than have nothing at all. So just be patient and, you know, this rain hopefully is going to stop one day. And
one day.
Hopefully it's going to get warmer. You know, and it's surprising if you get a few nice sunny days, particularly with a drying wind, how quickly that soil will dry out on the top so you can pull it about and you can start to sow.
So really, we need to catch up with you again in about a month or so's time and then check out what you can then sow, because that's what we're talking about, getting the soil warm enough and then being able to sow in an order that makes sense.
It does, yeah. And but don't forget, you know, there is things that if you have only got a windowsill, you could get on with sowing a few tomatoes, peppers, those sort of things, so that you can get ahead for the crops that you grow under cover. There's still things for that. You can sow some brassica seeds now. You know, your favourite, Ken, Brussels sprouts. You'd sow those. You'd sow those now, ready. I know we've only just about finished eating Brussels sprouts, but you need to sow now under glass or on your windowsill. Prick them out so you've got plants ready to plant out towards the end of April, because it's all about planning and getting ahead.
That is really what it's about. So it sounds like that, you know, planning is the most important thing, and not being too eager.
Yeah, and don't worry, you know, things will catch up.
Andrew, thank you very much. And I know King Seeds have got a great catalogue, and in fact, they can find you on, well, you as well on web. On the web, you give lots of sound help, don't you, each month?
We do, and on Instagram, etc., and there's tips and advice on there, and we're trying to cover, you know, with the weather, with the sowings as well. So hopefully, they can find those if they have a look.
All on King Seeds.
That's all on kingseeds.com.
Andrew, thank you very much for joining us today, and we look forward to catching up with you in the future.
No problem. Thanks, Ken.
Just a reminder, we'll be here on the 14th of April. And get your questions in nice and early, and you can send them in to post@worldradiogardening.com. Talking of which, we've had a question just come in from Henry from Colchester, and he's seen on Gardener's World that Monty was cutting back a buddleia, but his buddleia was a lot bigger than Monty Don's. He says his is 10 to 12 foot high. Can he cut it down hard? The answer is yes, you can, Henry. You can cut it down to something like, you could be as ruthless as cut it down to a foot if you wanted to, but I wouldn't suggest that. If it's that high, it will have very thick stems of something like 3 inches across. Choose about three of those, use a saw and cut those down really hard, down to something like a couple of feet. Then work your way up, go up higher, go halfway up and cut out all the twiggy growth. And then when you've got growth that's as thick as your thumb, reduce that by a third and you'll find that the buddleia then will start to look like a decent shaped bush. Next year, cut some of those, more of those thicker ones down hard and do the same process again. And that's the way you do it. Buddleias can be pruned in the autumn, but in all honesty, if you have a hard winter, you can get bud damage, so they're better off cut at this time of the year. So Monty did get it right, cutting them at this time of the year, but his was a nice little pretty one. But lots of people have got buddleias that are huge, so they are. You get good advice here on City Sound once a month. Don't forget, 14th of April, put it in your diary, tell your friends across the county and beyond. And you can get those in, all those questions, to post@worldradiogardening.com. And there's lots going on that webpage. Have a look at our YouTube channel. Go to the webpage. That's World Radio Gardening.
Bulbs haven't grown yet. Carrots covered in flies. Then look no further than the best website for practical gardening help. worldradiogardening.com. Packed full of the best experts, all leading professionals in the horticultural world, such as Ken Crowther, the website has you covered and can get your garden back on track. WorldRadioGardening.com now also includes tool reviews and the best gardening tips supplied by professionals. Check out the website WorldRadioGardening.com to improve the results on your allotment or garden and make sure the carrots are yours for eating.
Grow Right Horticultural Supplies is proud to sponsor World Radio Gardening.